This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The television version of this show airs on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. The Latin American oil economy of Venezuela is once more in crisis as right-wing opposition groups staged mass street protests this week after President Maduro's government stymied a referendum process. Maduro, who took up the legacy of the late President Hugo Chavez and his Bolivarian Revolution, faces a well-funded opposition which has accused him of mismanaging the nation's economy and also repeatedly attempted to oust him. Meanwhile, Maduro just announced a 40% hike in the national minimum wage as he continues to champion poor Venezuelans. But middle and upper class Venezuelans see him as a, quote, dictator. There are plans for a major march on November 3rd that will culminate at the presidential palace. Western media like the New York Times have called Maduro authoritarian. The Times editorial board even went as far as saying, quote, if there is more bloodshed, Mr. Maduro will be responsible. My guest is Miguel Tinker Salas. He's a professor of Latin American history and Chicano-Chicana Latino-Latina studies at Pomona College in Claremont, California. Welcome to the program, Miguel.
Thank you very much.
So first, can you explain what it was, this process that the opposition have attempted through, I understand, the Electoral Commission to try to undermine Maduro's presidency? Does it remind you at all of the sort of constitutional coup that Dilma Rousseff recently faced in Brazil?
It does, with very important differences. In Venezuela, the opposition does not control the vice presidency, does not control the judiciary, and has little or no influence within the military. So that this is a very highly complex process occurring in Venezuela. Venezuela, unlike the U.S., actually has a mechanism for recalling the president. That's something that was in the 1999 Constitution. Only two or three countries in Latin America have that, in Bolivia, Ecuador, and other countries. So what the opposition tried to trigger was the recall of the president, which can occur during the midterm 3 years into the presidency. That required them to get 1% of the voters registered in Venezuela to sign a petition. They only needed 200,000 signatures, but they turned in 1.9 million. Of those, many were fraudulent. Some were people who had passed away, others were in jail, others were children, others were falsified. So that the National Electoral Council provided a mechanism by which they could do a recount of those, a repair of those votes or names that were incorrect. Eventually, the National Electoral Council assigned a further date during this week, right now in October, for the 20% that was required to trigger the recall. Several lower courts passed sentences saying that the irregularities in five states were so bad that they had to recount them again. That has postponed the process. So now the opposition is no longer focused only on the recall. Now they want the ouster of Maduro through undemocratic means. And that's really what they're pushing in the current street protests.
Is it that they're simply impatient and were upset that their process through the Electoral Commission seems to have been delayed, but they just want it to happen right away?
Well, they wanted to happen right away. They've been wanting to have Maduro ousted from the day he was elected. The opposition refused to recognize his election. Washington refused to recognize the results of the election, claiming that there were irregularities. There was a recount of the electoral process. It was transparent. It was determined that he won fair and square. But again, they have simply refused to recognize his legitimacy the way that they refused to recognize Chavez's legitimacy. And in 2002, attempted a coup. And then again in 2003 and 2004, a national strike, and then again in 2004, a recall, and then in 2006 and 2007, actual street protests, and the same ones we saw in 2014 in February, where they said, take to the streets to unseat Maduro through undemocratic means. Again, they refused to negotiate. They refuse to engage in conversation. This is not to say the government has not made tremendous mistakes. They have, and they are responsible for much of the economic malaise in the country to a certain extent. But nonetheless, what's happening now is an effort to unseat a democratically elected government.
Let's talk about the economic problems. There has been massive inflation. Is it that, first of all, how has the government contributed to that? And has that been their weak point, that the opposition and even even the West and Western media has been able to exploit and somehow equate that with his rule as dictatorship.
Well, in point of fact, the fundamental problem is Venezuela's continued dependence on oil-generated revenue. Almost 96% of the nation's revenue comes from oil exports. As we all know, the price of oil has dropped calamitously for the exporting countries, so that when you had budgets of 120, you could resolve issues relatively quickly. When you have price of oil at $35, $36 a barrel, and Venezuela has heavy crude, which means it has to import light crude to mix with heavy crude, so its actual profit margin is actually lower. So in that context, Venezuela faces other challenges as well. But the fundamental issue is the continued dependence on oil, and that's something the Chavez government never fundamentally challenged. It thought it could use continued oil profits to improve social conditions, to ameliorate poverty. So it didn't challenge that fundamentally. The other problem has, and that has now precipitated, because the other problem is the question of the currency exchange. It's impossible to continue to maintain three different currency exchange mechanisms, which is what the government is trying to do. And then you have a black market rate or an informal market rate of almost a 1,000 to 1 compared to what the government is trying to offer. They've made some efforts to reduce that, but they've also curtailed the amount of dollars in the economy. Thus, there is scarcity generated as a result of that, because again, most of what Venezuela consumes is imported, and it's imported in dollars, not in bolivares. So that is helped increase the scarcity. Now, Venezuela has reduced its imports significantly, 40-50%. So that part has been done in some ways. But the continued issue of three multiple currency rates and the massive subsidies, which they do to help ameliorate poverty. Again, Venezuelan gasoline is the cheapest in the world. So it means it costs the government close to $15 billion to maintain a subsidy on gasoline, which could be raised to at least the production costs. So there are many issues in the economy that the government has to address, has to confront, that they have not shown the political will to do that. And therefore, they have scarcity, which has undermined some of their support.
And in fact, Chavez was warned by many of his allies to address the fact that Venezuela was overly dependent on oil, not even because it's economically volatile, but even, you know, for people who wanted to champion the fight against climate change. And so now, unfortunately, we're seeing Maduro take on this issue as well. And is he, I mean, you know, in promising a 40% hike to the minimum wage, is he winning over support from the poor, or are people even among the ranks of his would-be supporters frustrated with the state of the economy?
I think they're also frustrated. We have a saying in Spanish, no se puede tapar el sol con un dedo. You can't cover the sun with your finger. And the reality is that even the 40% does not match the label of inflation. So that, again, this is not going to help the question of scarcity. It's not going to help the question of availability of products, the long lines. Venezuelans are not used to having to stand in line to find basic products, so that there's shortages of everything that's consumed. And also, therefore, because the dollars are used to buy goods abroad, there are shortages in medicine, shortages in basic products. And again, I don't think that simply a 40% is going to really change the position of support that Maduro has in this context. He has seen a dramatic drop among Chavista support for Maduro. But still, I think that the larger question is that no matter what Maduro does, these are structural questions in the economy that are going to face any government, whether it's opposition or Maduro or the PSUV or anybody else in this context. And the reality is the country needs a national dialogue. And both sides appear to be intransigent. Both sides seem to be playing a game of brinksmanship. And the reality is that the issues really do need a national dialogue to begin to address, because the opposition doesn't have any answers. They don't have an answer to the dependence. They don't have an answer to the inflation. They don't have an answer to the crime. They don't have an answer to the fact that most of the goods that the country consumes are imported. They rely on the market. They claim by activating the market, they will be able to return Venezuela to the earlier period. That's highly improbable given the current state of the oil economy and the continued drop in prices.
And isn't the earlier period one where the poor were at the whim of a capitalist trickle-down economy? I mean, essentially, is this from the right a ideological battle, seeing, you know, a socialist government that they feel needs to be defeated?
No doubt, the elites in Venezuela were accustomed to having the state do its bidding. It was their state. The reality is that Venezuela has a very fragile sense of national identity and national nationalism. The reality is that the state project was seen as the private property of an elite enlightened class that would govern the country, would use oil revenues, would have a little bit of trickle down to the population. But the reality is the population has exploded in Venezuela. Venezuela has 30, 35 million people. Right now, it'll have in 20 years 50 million people. The reality is that that's the real conditions that the country faces. And unless there is a dramatic change in the character of the oil economy, where again the country is able to diversify, it will have this recurrent set of crises. This is not the first time the country has faced an economic crisis because of dependence on oil. It has been a recurrent process, but this is the challenge for any third world country that depends on the export of commodities to the industrialized world in order to sustain itself. It will continue to face this, as are other countries in the continent right now, with a drop in the price of other basic commodities, whether it's copper, whether it's tin, whether it's coffee, whether it's agricultural products. Again, the larger question is the neocolonial relationship that exists between exporting countries such as Venezuela and the larger developed countries of the North Atlantic states.
So, Miguel, at this point, what recourse does the opposition have if their process through the Electoral Commission has been delayed? They are out in the streets. As I mentioned, they've got this massive march planned November 3rd that'll culminate in front of the presidential palace. Is the sense you have that that because they're not willing to wait, they're going to simply try to oust him in some other way? I mean, are we going to see a repeat of the kind of coup that Hugo Chavez faced and managed to actually survive?
Well, I don't think that the coup is an option. The Venezuelan military has already issued a statement saying that they will not participate in any illegal process, that they respect the Constitution and the constitutional order. That was from the top generals. It's unclear, obviously, if there are divisions within the lower ranks, but that's clear. The opposition has tried to do what they did in Brazil. They want to have a political trial for Maduro, claiming he has abandoned his office and that therefore he can be tried. It's ridiculous. First of all, part of the claim of him abandoning his office is a birther movement. They still want to claim that he's a Colombian, that he's not a Venezuelan. It's ridiculous. It's similar to what we saw in the case of Obama, somehow with Trump and Obama not being a U.S. citizen.
Oh, wow.
That aside, they are also claiming that they can have a trial in the National Assembly that will find him having abandoned his charge and therefore seek to replace him. But again, the Supreme Court would not sanction that and would not support that. So they will try the protest. Going towards November 3rd is a provocation. And November 3rd, going towards the presidential palace is a provocation. That's exactly what happened in 2002 that led to the coup. So they're trying to use the past and the issue of the past to try to create conditions of ungovernability. If they go towards the Miraflores Palace, undoubtedly there will be clashes with government supporters. And that's in some ways seems to be what they're looking for by stating that they want to march toward Miraflores Palace. Miraflores is in western Caracas. It is a center of the government support, and it's unlikely that they will allow them to march towards Miraflores. But again, this is being staged for the international media, for the consumption of the international media to report, again, an authoritarian government in Venezuela, quote unquote, repressing the population. They do have an out. They can go back to those five states. They can actually collect the signatures that they were required in those five states, submit them, and then initiate the process for the recall, gather the 20%, stage the recall. What they are upset about is that unless that's all done by January 10th, the recall will only remove Maduro, and then the vice president will become the president. And that would be Aristóbal Ruiz Turiz, who is a vice president, who is also a member of the PSUV. They will not be able to get rid of the PSUV in power, which is what they are really trying to do.
And so I'm glad you brought up this notion that they are, the November 3rd march is a provocation because, of course, if there are any clashes between police or between supporters of the government and the opposition, then plays right into the hands of the Western media that has reported in such a biased way against the Venezuelan government that, they often fail to report that Maduro was and continues to be a democratically elected president. important. So Miguel, what do you make of the Western media coverage? Is there any mainstream media outlet that has been better than others? I mentioned the New York Times. From what I could tell, there isn't a single mainstream media outlet in the United States that actually gives a balanced view of what's happening.
There is not a balanced view. The Washington Post calls the Venezuelan government a full-blown dictatorship. The New York Times in 2002 endorsed the coup, saying that Chavez brought it upon himself, much what the State Department had said. And it's unfortunate because I would really like to see a mainstream reporter ask the opposition, what is their plan? How will they be able to revitalize the Venezuelan economy when oil prices are dropping? How are they going to make operation more efficient? You can't simply tell us that you're going to rely on the markets, because relying on the markets was what got Venezuela into its mess in the first place. How are they going to deal with production in the country? How are they going to deal with crime without repressing the population? What are they going to do with the growing population increase in Venezuela? And how are they going to incorporate that population, those youth, into the productive sector? How are they? What is their vision for the nation? How do they see themselves in relationships with the rest of the continent in Latin America? Those are the questions that never get asked. Right. The questions are always framed in terms of Maduro, a repressive government, and a democratic opposition. But that opposition has shown that in the past, it has not been democratic. Remember February of 2014, when the opposition stated, basically, take to the streets, heat up the streets, and overthrow Maduro by any means necessary, led to the death of 43 people. On both sides of the political spectrum. Again, using opposition, using efforts at ungovernability to topple a democratically elected government.
And who can you identify as the leaders of this right-wing opposition? We know that Leopoldo López, is he still in prison? What about Enrique Capriles? Who among the right-wing sees him or herself as a leader to head the post-coup government that they might be fantasizing?
Well, this is a heterogeneous opposition. They are not united. They're united only in the ouster of Nicolás Maduro and replacing the PSUV. But in terms of a united front, you have a return of Acción Democrática, the party everyone assumed was dead in Venezuela. And the leader of the National Assembly is Ramos Alup, who was a member of the Acción Democrática party going back to the 70s and 80s and has a checkered past. In addition, you have Julio Borges and Primero Justicia, which is a neoliberal party that comes out of the 1990s. You have Leopoldo López's party, Voluntad Popular. You have Maria Corina Machado, an independent, who is part of this opposition as well. You have Chucho Torrealba, which is the titular leader of the MUD, the MUD, which has been arguing for actually participating in the negotiations. We do have an effort by the Vatican this weekend in the Island of Margarita, which have convened all parties to come to Margarita to engage in a process of negotiation to find some sort of settlement to the conditions that confront Venezuela. The government said we will attend. Torrealba initially said he would attend. Now others in the opposition say, including Capriles, who is still very much present, who is still a participant and still an important actor in this process, has said he won't attend. So again, we're in a situation of an impasse reminiscent of 2003 when the Carter Center tried to bring the different forces in Venezuela together and they refused. Mm-hmm. So again, we hope that the effort at negotiation sponsored by the Vatican would bring these parties together and attempt to find some collective answer.
Right. And we saw in the recent situation in Colombia, very different situation, of course, but some success in a diplomatic Latin America discussion that, the U.S. sort of actually played a relatively positive role in. Any sense that you have that the U.S. State Department has its fingers in Venezuela at this time? We know, of course, it's been steeped in past moments of Venezuela's crises, but do we have any evidence emerging of U.S. interference right now?
Well, the U.S. doesn't have to have a direct role. I mean, the U.S. sells its project of the American way of life, trying to attain something that's impossible for most countries in the third world. The U.S. is very much interested in regime change in Latin America, particularly in the context of Venezuela. We saw, again, a return of the right wing in Argentina, a return of the right wing in Brazil. So we see efforts at rolling back the left tide in Latin America. Venezuela was one of the initiators, the beginning of this process. crisis. So it's been targeted for regime change by the Bush administration, by the Obama administration, and no doubt by any future U.S. administration, whether it's Clinton or it's Trump. So in that context, the U.S. is very much present and is an active participant in Venezuela through the use of the media, through the use of the internet, through the use of multiple medias, where, again, the U.S. presence is ever felt.
Miguel, I want to thank you, as always, for joining us and for putting this issue into the much-needed context that's absent from the mainstream media. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Miguel Tinker Salas is a professor of Latin American history and Chicano, Chicana, Latino, Latina studies at Pomona College in Claremont, California. We've been talking about the ongoing crisis in Venezuela. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.